proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome to the Free Speech Zone.
And greetings from San Francisco, the city by the bay. Tom Hartman here with you. Tonight I will be at 7:30, I believe it is. 7 or 7:30. Check your listings. I'll have that information as we go along here. Let's see. Yeah, the 7:30 screening at the San Francisco Landmark Embarcadero. Be doing a question and answer with Paul Hawken after the opening of Leonardo DiCaprio's new movie, The 11th Hour. So it's going to be a great time. It is Friday, and as always, we start with Senator Bernie Sanders, our Brunch with Bernie segment. The senator from Vermont, neither a Democrat nor a Republican, the independent, the longest-serving independent in the House of Representatives, now an independent in the United States Senate. His website, bernie.senate.gov. And Bernie Sanders, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Always great having you here, Bernie. You've been working with Robert Greenwald, or you recently saw his movie on Iran?
What Robert Greenwald does, he works with Brave New Films, and he does an extraordinarily good job in getting information out on the Internet about important subjects. And the subject that I work with him on dealt with the Fox TV network trying to push this country, as they did in Iraq, toward a war with Iran. And what he did, I thought brilliantly, was compare how they approached the lead-up to the war in Iraq with what they're doing now in Iran. And it's deja vu all over again. And the message at the end of the three-minute video was to have people contact their television networks and say, do not follow Fox's lead. Become a critical, independent voice, which is what media is supposed to be, rather than just an echo chamber for the Bush administration. And the fear is that Fox is leading the way and other stations are going to follow. The simple truth of the matter is that at a time when the war in Iraq has been so difficult, and it's a war obviously that we should never have gotten in, it's a war that we should get out of as soon as possible, at a time when in Afghanistan we're seeing the resurgence of the Taliban, and the situation there is becoming more dour, as a result of Bush shifting resources from Afghanistan toward Iraq, the idea that we would get into another war, this time in Iran through a preemptive strike on the part of the Bush administration, is almost unthinkable, that it would be a disaster, and we've got to do everything that we can to prevent that.
Yeah, we have really jumped into this briar patch, and this new intelligence estimate, it's going to be tough no matter what. I mean, Bush has just opened the gates of hell over there.
That's right, but the idea of making those gates even wider by starting a war that would not probably end in our lifetime against the Muslim world is beyond comprehension. So the goal here is to say to the corporate media, do not do what you did in terms of the lead-up to the war in Iraq. Do not simply become a megaphone for the Bush administration. Be critical. Ask the hard questions. And I think that's very, very important, not only in preventing a war with Iran, but making people realize that when you talk about politics, it's not just the White House, it's not just Congress. Media is very important in terms of understanding what happens politically.
Well said. The President, Mr. Bush, has promised, I understand, to veto the state children's health insurance program, and there's an interesting coalition on the conservative side. Apparently, they're concerned that it's going to expand access to birth control services and things like that.
Well,
and, what's...
Well, it's even worse than that, Tom. Right now, we are the only country, as I'm sure many of our listeners know, in the entire industrialized world, that not only does not guarantee health care to all of its people, but certainly all of its children. So here we are in the richest country in the history of the world. We have over 9 million kids who have no health insurance. What's going on in Congress now is an effort is being made, and we passed it with a pretty strong vote in the Senate, to expand health insurance coverage to another 3 million kids through the S-CHIP program. You have Bush not only threatening to veto that, but even worse, What he is now telling states around the country, I think there are about 18 states, including my state of Vermont, that if you are providing through the SCHIP program health insurance to kids who are above 250% of their families above 250% of the poverty level, you can't do that anymore. You can't use the money to do that. The result would be that tens and tens of thousands of children today who are having health insurance would be thrown off of that program. So it's not only that he doesn't want to expand the program, he literally wants to throw kids off of this program. And this is at a time when Mr. Bush is fighting for hundreds of billions of dollars more in tax breaks for the wealthiest 1%. We're spending, what, $10, $12 billion every single month on Iraq, but we can't afford to provide health insurance to our kids. And this is an issue we're going to play. My office is going to play a very, very active role. We are not going to let them throw children off of health insurance. And, in fact, we're going to continue the fight to make sure that every kid in this country has health insurance. That's not only the moral and right thing to do. It's just good economics. Can you imagine the stupidity of having a situation where kids who are ill, who are not being diagnosed with their ill, carrying that illness until they get older, end up in the hospital, end up with a serious life-threatening situation, which ends up costing a whole lot of money. It makes no sense from any perspective.
Yeah, the argument that's being made on the other side is that what you're talking about, what we're talking about here in expanding health insurance that's being paid for by government is socialism. Well, and in fact, yesterday I noticed on C-SPAN, the guy, I referred to him as the little weasel, Ed Henry, referred to you in a report. He said, self-avowed socialist Bernie Sanders, and then, you know, had some quote from you. I mean,
well, that's interesting, Tom, and I think, and that's why we're going to get very deeply into this issue. In my state of Vermont, the SCHIP program and our children's health insurance program is called the Dr. Dinosaur program.
Right.
When Howard Dean was a governor, he expanded that program. It is working very, very well. I don't believe I have talked to one parent, and I talk to a whole lot of parents, who are not very positive about this program. And what the right wing is worried about, and I should say there are similar type programs all over the country, in New York, California, they want to expand these programs. They are working very well. They are cost effective. And what the right wing is, in fact, worried about, it's just what you were talking about, is that if you expand a good program and you cover all of the children in this country cost effectively, people will say, you know, that's a pretty good program. But why are the mothers and the fathers not being covered the same way
right.
that the kids? And that's called a national health care program. That is the direction that we should go to. And, in fact, the opposition to the expansion of the SCHIP program is precisely not because it is bad, not because it is not cost-effective, but precisely it is a good cost-effective program. And these guys are much more interested in protecting the insurance companies and the drug companies rather than the children and people of our country.
Yeah, and adding to the list of people that these conservatives or whatever, Republicans, let's call them, are not interested in protecting are our veterans.
Absolutely. Here I have some good news for the veterans who are listening, and I say this as a member of both the Budget Committee and the Veterans Committee. This legislation is meandering through Congress, but I think you have seen, both in the Senate and in the House, the most significant increase in funding for veterans' health care and veterans' needs that we have seen in a long, long time. And that is just something that is long overdue. The truth of the matter is that if you get into a VA facility, a hospital or a clinic, it is generally agreed upon that you get very good quality health care. The problem is that because Bush has underfunded VA health care for many years, it is hard for many of our veterans to get into the system. What we are trying to do is put substantially more money, better staffing into the system, do better outreach work, strengthen our clinics, and also address the backlog of claims that many veterans have. So I think what you will see out of this Congress is a significant increase in VA funding, taking care of our veterans, which is something that we should do not only, obviously, for the men and women returning from Iraq and Afghanistan, but for our older veterans as well.
Yeah, well said. It continually astounds me how George W. Bush and many Republican candidates, I mean, right across the board, We'll line up a bunch of guys in uniform for a photo op, but when it comes time to vote for to support these guys, no.
You got it. Tax breaks for the rich are much more important than taking care of others.
That's right. They'll send them to war, but they won't send them to the hospital.
Right.
Senator Bernie Sanders is with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. He'll be taking your calls next. Our number, 1-866-303-2270. Toll-free nationwide. TomHartmann.com, AirAmerica.com, our blogs, Sanders.Senate.gov, Bernie's.
The Tom Hartmann Program, where smart people get their news. This is Air America Radio.
Well, my face may not be pretty, and my clothes are not the best, and there ain't no big shots in my family tree. But if you're wondering who it was that made this country great, you don't have to look no further, it was me. I'm the man that built the bridges, I'm the man that laid the track, I'm the man that built this country with my shoulders and my back. I'm the man that built the power dams and oiled all the cars, and I laid down the cornerstone for this great land of ours.
21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartmann here with you. Our Brunch with Bernie segment. This Senator Bernie Sanders taking your calls, 866-303-2270, our number toll-free nationwide. You can also drop by our blog at airamerica.com, and there's links to our live chat room, which I'm in. I'm broadcasting live today from San Francisco. And Bernie, ready to go. Hit the phone calls here. Okay, let's see. Norman in Washington, D.C. Norman, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hey, how's it going? It's good to talk to finally a senator with no strings attached. First of all, I think the only way we beat them on a health care argument is to pull out their hypocrisy. On one hand, they want to tell a woman what they can do with their own body as it pertains to abortion. On the other hand, when the child comes out, they don't want anything to do with the child. On one hand, you have a president that says he protects American citizens from everything, and yet he won't protect the American citizen from cancer, won't protect them from AIDS, won't protect them from diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
So why is it I think that the Democrats should just truly hit them on their hypocrisy instead of always beating them up about facts. They'll never win an argument with us about facts, but their people drink the Kool-Aid. So I think we need to splash the Kool-Aid right back on them.
Well, Norman, thank you. And I think you raise an excellent issue, and you put it in a very perceptive way. Here he is telling the whole world how much he worries about the so-called unborn child, and yet we have by far the highest rate of childhood poverty in the industrialized world. We have kids who are hungry. We have kids who are sleeping out on the street, and he wants to literally cut back on children's health care. The hypocrisy is rampant, and our job is to develop a strong grassroots movement which fundamentally changes the national priorities of this country. We can, in fact, have a national health care program like every other country on earth, which provides excellent quality health care to every man, woman, and child without spending any more than we're currently spending in our broken, wasteful, and bureaucratic system. So your point is exactly right. We have to expose the hypocrisy.
Well said. Matt in Garfield, New Jersey. Matt, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, how you doing? First, I'd like to say I am from Jersey, but I am planning on looking for a house up in Burlington so I can say my Senator Bernie Sanders.
Thanks very much. Well, it's not just that. You'll enjoy Burlington. You'll enjoy Vermont. It's a great place to be.
My question is, you watch the talk shows and the news, and you get, you know, Democrats and people there who are supposedly talking about, and from an anti-war stance, saying that A, the surge is working, and B, that they use Al-Anbar province as a reason the surge is working. But as far as I know, didn't we leave Al-Anbar province 8 months ago before it started to calm down over there? And isn't it just a example of why we should get the hell out of there?
Well, I think we have got to get out of there as quickly as possible. The idea that the surge is working, I think any good police chief in America will tell you that when you flood a high-crime area with a lot of police officers, you can dampen the amount of activity taking place. But what's happening elsewhere in the country? How anyone talks about a surge that is working when 4 million Iraqi people have been displaced, half of them out of their country, when their infrastructure is collapsing, when their middle class is leaving, when their government is barely functional, when, in fact, according to the national intelligence estimate, Al-Qaeda today is growing stronger and stronger and poses more of a threat to the United States than has been the case for a very long time. Our entire policy in Iraq has been a disaster. We should not have gotten in. We were totally unprepared for what happened. Bush does not know how to get our troops out. And I hope and believe, Matt, that what you are going to see when Congress reconvenes is a stronger, more focused effort on the part of Congress to bring our troops home as soon as possible and develop a new strategy to fight the very serious problems of international terrorism.
Yeah, indeed. Elizabeth in West Bloomfield, Michigan, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders. We have just a little less than a minute before we got to take a break at the bottom of the hour.
Yes, good morning to both of you. Good morning, Congressman Sanders.
Good morning, Elizabeth.
My question is on a different topic, and I hope to not be changing topics on you too quickly, but I'm concerned about this FISA revision, the choice that was made right before Congress left for
right.
the month. Is there anything that we can do to undo
yes.
that, or are we just stuck with that?
No, you're not stuck with it. I voted against that bill. There was a six-month sunset. I believe the Democrats are going to bring that issue up very shortly, as soon as we get back. There is great concern all over this country about a president and administration that does not understand what our Constitution is about, that thinks they don't have to go to courts to get approval to do wiretapping, etc. So this is an issue, Elizabeth, that you're going to see surfacing very shortly.
It's Brunch with Bernie on the Tom Hartman program on Air America Radio. It's Bernie Sanders, Senator Bernie Sanders from Vermont, on the line with us taking your calls on any topic. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number, TomHartman.com, AirAmerica.com for our blog and for our live chat room. Stick around.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
Now back to the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
It was about 5 to 5 on Friday, and we were all getting ready to go.
Oh, yeah.
And the boss man started screaming, and a band began to show. He said, you come with me, cause you're going out the step. Well, my heart was thumping, and I was jumping, I had to get away.
And welcome back, 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders answering your calls, answering your questions. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Sean in Vancouver, Washington, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Good morning, Senator Sanders.
Good morning.
Senator Sanders, an argument being made for a Fed rate cut is that Bernanke shouldn't make the mistake of the Herbert Hoover administration by being so ideologically rigid that they fail to use the government to intervene in the economy. I say, why not let the economy go into crisis? Let markets do what markets do, and maybe we can finally burst this bubble of the religion of free market capitalism. Then we can start nationalizing some industries, rebuild New Orleans, rebuild our infrastructure, care for our sick and elderly with some good old democratic socialism. What do you think?
Well, I don't think it's a particularly good idea to allow our economy to go into crisis. The middle class today is already hurting. Poverty is increasing. Real wages and income are going down for tens of millions of Americans. I think we've got to fight for the middle class, fight for lower income people, fight for rational economic policies, including a national health care program which guarantees health care for all people. I think what we learned a couple of months ago in Minneapolis is that our infrastructure is facing enormous problems. We can create a whole lot of good-paying jobs, not only as we rebuild our bridges and highways, our wastewater plants, our water plants, our dams. A lot of work to be done in this country to rebuild it, but I don't think we should let our economy fall apart and hurt tens of millions of people.
Mike in Chatham, New Jersey. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
My question is, why don't you support mandatory minimums for child molesters?
state. I mean, significant minimums.
Why don't I support mandatory minimums for child? I am not a good, well, obviously there's no crime worse than assaulting children. This issue of mandatory minimums, though, is, in my view, not a great idea, and it causes a lot of havoc with our judicial system, and many leading judges think that it does not make a lot of sense because you're treating every criminal in exactly the same way. So I think we should be giving discretion to the judicial system in many instances.
Regardless of crime. Chris, in Salinas, California, you're on the air.
Hello, Senator Sanders.
Hi.
Yes, back a few months ago, you promised to take a look at Feinstein's 1487, the voting machine bill. And in light of Deborah Bowen's findings in California, these machines are a detriment to our democracy and to our one little piece of democracy that we have, voting. Have you taken a look at this bill, a hard look like you promised? And one, would you support a complete ban of any DRE, electronic touchscreen voting machine?
Well, I have taken a look at it, not a deep look, so I can't give you a definitive answer on that, Chris. I don't know that I would ban every touchscreen in America. I happen to believe this country would be better served literally if we went back to paper ballots. It has worked well for us in the past. We live in a country where states also make decisions, so I can't impose a decision on every state in the country. But I have very strong concerns about touchscreens, and your point is that we have seen the ability for people to hack into them, and that is an issue we should be deeply concerned about.
Vic in Cedar Creek, Texas, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hello, Tom and Bernie. Well, Bernie, all I can say is from America is hell. I wonder, have you ever looked into and addressed the cancer that is on the small towns with corporate tax abatements? It seems like every large corporation,
yep,
whether the town needs it or not, is getting tax abatements and reinvestment zones, and it's all smoke and mirrors. But bottom line, corporate America, which in some cases is very profitable, is getting millions and millions and probably billions across the United States in tax abatements at the expense of counties, which you just talked about. They need better roads. I live in a county that's got a dirt road, and they gave a $9 million tax abatement to a large retail corporation, which, according to the stock market, is very profitable.
So
what are you guys doing about it? Because the local people won't do anything about it. The state won't do anything about it. They got a welfare clause here in Texas that just about, you know, anybody that wants a tax abatement can get it. And, you know, I look at it as a prepayment penalty for shopping in these areas.
Well, Vic, you raise a very important and interesting question, which is something that some of us have looked at over the years. The difficulty is that you have a desperate need all over this country for good-paying jobs. So if a company comes along and says, well, we're thinking of going to Texas, but we may go to Colorado, or we may go to Mississippi with these good-paying jobs, and states, what do you have to offer us? And then the states begin to outbid each other with tax breaks, with job training programs, with infrastructure improvements, and so forth and so on, and the taxpayers pay the bill for what, as you indicated, are often very profitable corporations. There was an effort some years ago to say that when you had this type of bidding, the federal government should step in, because it really is a form of corporate welfare, and say, well, you know, if you states want to do that, you're going to lose some federal money, that corporations should be paying their fair share of taxes, and that local communities should not have to pay a substantial sum of money for the freedom to work.
So you could use things like federal highway funds,
right,
as a way of...
Harder than it looks, but that was the thrust of that argument.
Is that going to come back around, Bernie? That's a great idea.
It's staying there. I don't know that it would pass. I mean, the difficulty is you have governors who campaign on creating jobs. They will do anything they can to attract the plant. They will be adamantly opposed to this idea. But the caller is absolutely right. We are subsidizing large, profitable corporations by having states compete against each other. And not only states, you're seeing cities and towns competing against each other.
Yeah, interesting. Rich in Stratford, Connecticut. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders, Rich.
Hi, Senator. I wonder why it is that whenever a new bill like the Patriot Act or the authorization for domestic spying program comes up, I hear that you guys don't read the bills and you just vote on them. I mean, you can spend 5 minutes.
One second, Rich. What you hear may not necessarily be correct, and that may be true for some people, and it may not be true for other people. So it's not you guys. There may be senators who do that. They have staff doing it. But I would not make that generalization. As it happens on the Patriot Act, I was one of the leaders in opposition to the Patriot Act, voted against it the first time, voted against it the second time, voted against this recent FISA bill. Some of us do read this legislation. Very often what you have is a political divide. Many of our Republican friends do not worry terribly about abrogation of constitutional rights when the president says he has to fight terrorism. They give him free rein to do what he wants to do. Some of us have been very vigilant in opposing that. So you make a good point, but don't generalize it, okay?
Yeah. And at the same time, the Republicans had developed this into an art form, hadn't they,
sure,
Bernie, about bringing legislation to the floor and saying, okay, you guys, you've got an hour to read it and vote on it.
That is true. But the other thing that is true is it's a potent look. When I ran for the Senate, when other people ran for the Senate, the argument that was used is, candidate X doesn't really care about your health and welfare and the welfare of the American people. Terrorism's out there. He does not care about stopping terrorism. And that's because, you know, we believe in constitutional rights and we think there's a process that you can go through. And we think you can fight terrorism without undermining the Constitution. But in a 5-second soundbite, it sounds pretty good.
Yeah. Frank in Middletown, New York, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Senator. Years ago, a very cynical advisor of mine said, you know, what counts is not what you do, it's what you appear to do.
Yeah.
And you've been very good over the weeks and months of trying to explain to us each week what the Democrats are doing in Congress and the positive things that are happening. But nevertheless, poll after poll indicates that voters, including Democratic voters, have an even lower approval of rating for the Congress than they do for the president. And why can't the Democrats seem to get this message out? And why is there no fire? Where are our, forgive me, Newt Gingrich's, and where are the firebrands on the Democratic side getting people excited about what's going on? Nobody seems to care or understand what's going on.
Frank, you raise a fair and legitimate point. I think that the American people very strongly feel that this country is moving in the wrong direction. There is just a belief that Bush is taking us in the wrong direction in almost every issue, from global warming to the war to the economy to healthcare to whatever. And I think the anger at the Congress, and by the way, these same polls show, I should tell you, Frank, and I say this as an independent, not as a Democrat, that the Democrats are far ahead of the Republicans. Congress is held in very low esteem, but the Republicans are way behind the Democrats on most of these polls. But I think the essence is that the American people want exactly what Frank was saying. They want people to stand up and say, we have got to change the direction of this country. I think what people are hungering for also are voices and legislation which deal with the growing income inequality and economic inequality in this country. And they want Congress to stand up to the big money interests that have so much power. And frankly, they are not hearing that.
Yeah, I've been suggesting that people call their elected representatives and say, hey, we've got your back. We're with you. Don't be afraid.
Right, that's right.
Good step one. Senator Bernie Sanders with us taking your calls. Brunch with Bernie, sanders.senate.gov. His website, 45 minutes past the hour.
Truth in broadcasting. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
When you crack the sky, scrapers fill the air. But will you keep on building higher till there's no more room up there? Will you make us laugh? Will you make us cry? Will you tell us when to live? Will you tell us when to die? I know we've come a long way,
tell me, where do the children play?
Welcome back. 9.5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from the Quake in San Francisco, California, where I'll be at the San Francisco Landmark Embarcadero downtown tonight for the 7:30 screening. We'll be doing a Q&A after that of The 11th Hour, Leonardo DiCaprio's new movie, along with about 50 other folks. I'm in it, and it should be very, very interesting and very entertaining. Paul Stamets is also in it. He'll be our guest in the the top of the next hour. Yes.
Tom, before we get going to more questions, I wanted to pick up on Frank's call, the last call that came in, and he makes a very good point. And he talks about how the fact that the Democratic Congress has achieved a number of important things, and in fact they have, raising the minimum wage, increasing financial aid for college families, dealing with global warming and so forth and so on. But I think bottom line, he is right, in the sense that the people do not perceive that the Democrats are standing up as strongly as they should in fighting back against Bush's agenda. And one of the problems we have in the Senate is, many people know, it takes 60 votes to stop a filibuster and get a vote on a piece of legislation. Republicans have been using it and demanding that it takes 60 votes. They've been filibustering. And I think, backing up Frank's point, that what we should do in the Senate is say, you want a filibuster? We'll filibuster. We're going to be here all day. We're going to be here all night. You want to stop children's health insurance? You know, you want to continue the war in Iraq? You don't want to take care of our veterans? That's fine. Let the American people drop into this debate, because it's going to go on for 24 hours. It's going to go on for 48 hours. It will go on until we win this fight. Yeah. And I think that's the kind of energy that the Democrats are going to need in order to let the American people know that they are, in fact, on their side and not on the corporate interests side.
Back to the old-fashioned filibusters that are full of theater and...
Exactly. You know, what goes on right now, somebody says, okay, we're filibustering. We do a vote. We got 54 votes. We don't have enough to stop the debate. And people say, okay, we'll go on to the next thing. I think not. Let's stay on it.
Yeah, good on you. And hopefully others will you know, get on that bandwagon.
I think you'll see more and more people understand that.
Good. And by the way, I just wanted to mention, we're going to be, 1 week from today, C-SPAN is going to be showing up at our studios in Portland, Oregon, and all 3 hours of our program are going to be live on C-SPAN. So our listeners also will have a chance to watch it, which should be very entertaining. And so we'll see how that goes. Susan in Seattle, Washington, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Good morning, gentlemen. Tom, I have a rant, good excuse for you to have a rant, and I have an obscure issue. Yesterday I received a letter from Child Support Enforcement saying that in the Deficit Reduction Act, they are now requiring the states to take $25 once a year from the custodial parent from the child support payments, if you are getting a child support payment in excess of $500. I was wondering, Senator, if you were aware of it.
Susan, I apologize. That issue does not come to my mind. I would suggest giving your local senator, local representative or senator a call on that.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. 1-866-303-2270, Amy in Manhattan. You're on with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hello.
Hi.
Mr. Sanders, Congressman. Last Sunday, Senator, there was an article about Medicare refusing to fund accidents in hospitals. Medicare won't cover hospital errors. It was on page one of the Sunday Times, and I haven't heard anyone speaking about it. Can you speak to that?
Sure. Obviously, one of the problems that we have in our hospitals is a lot of people die in hospitals because of infections and other problems that exist.
25% of all hospital deaths are iatrogenic.
Is it that high?
Yeah, 25%.
Sure. And this is, I know the VA has worked on this with some success. I think they're doing better than most hospital systems. It is not my thought that Medicare should not cover that, but it is an issue that we should pay a heck of a lot of attention. This is something that is, by and large, preventable. Some hospitals, as I understand, are doing a lot better than other hospitals. And hospitals that are not doing well should have pressure being put on them. I don't know that that means you're cutting back Medicare funding,
though. I think this is a good example of what happens when you have the profit motive. You have hospitals who are, their first goal in existence is not to provide health care, it's to make a profit. And if somebody gets an infection or if somebody gets sick because the hospital screwed up, the hospital actually makes more money. And so,
by prolonging the
right. So what Medicare said is, we're not going to give you guys an incentive anymore to make expenses. We're going to instead give you an incentive to stop making expenses. And I think it's sort of putting a Band-Aid on a cancer, because the bigger problem is that we have for-profit hospitals.
Well, I mean, your second
My
point,
opinion.
It's only for-profit hospitals. We have a for-profit health system, which ends up costing us twice as much per person as any other nation on earth, and yet we have 46 million uninsured, and there is not, as you indicate, an incentive to keep people healthy, to keep people out of the hospital, to make sure that all of our people have primary health care, access to doctors or dentists, etc. So, I think most people now understand, getting well beyond the problems of particular hospitals, that our system is crumbling and we need to move in a very different direction.
Yeah, I remember, when I was a kid growing up in Michigan, all the hospitals were, Ingham County Hospital, they were all nonprofit. They were required by law in Michigan in the 50s and 60s to be not-for-profit organizations. So their first goal was to provide health care and make sure that it was health care.
Well, Tom, our system is in so much trouble. It's not only that so many people are uninsured or underinsured, we are not even producing the doctors, the nurses, the dentists that we need to take care of the people.
Yeah, we're starting to have to import them.
Right.
Senator Bernie Sanders, his website, sanders.senate.gov. Senator Bernie Sanders, Senator Sanders, thanks so much for being with us.
Good to be with you, Tom.
It's always great.
Bye-bye.
Talk to you later. 57 minutes past the hour. Paul Stamets coming up next. Why is saving an old-growth forest a national defense issue? Stick around.
Hartman Program, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. This is Air America Radio. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio, where smart people get their news.
And welcome back. Anything Goes Friday. We'll be taking your calls on pretty much anything you want to talk about throughout the rest of the program, with two exceptions. We have a guest on right now, Paul Stamets, who's going to be with us in just a second. And also, I'm expecting we'll probably have a report from the Talk Radio News Service. But our number, 866-303-2270, over at airamerica.com. If you go to the Tom Hartman page, go to airamerica.com and click on Tom Hartman, you'll find a listing of all of the openings right now, from Evanston, Illinois, and Chicago, Cambridge, Dallas, Birmingham, Irvine, California, Philadelphia, San Francisco, Toronto, Washington, D.C. The places where today, the 11th hour, Leonardo DiCaprio's new movie is opening. So you can check that out and check out a theater near you. I will be at the opening tonight at the San Francisco Landmark Embarcadero downtown. And Paul Stamets is going to be at the 11th hour opening tonight in Seattle at the Egyptian Theater at 7 p.m., 805 East Pine Street in Seattle. Paul's website is it fungi.com?
F-U-N-G-I.com. Thank you, Tom.
Right. Thank you, Paul, and welcome to the program. Paul is the author of six books, his most recent being Mycelium Running, How Mushrooms Can Help Save the World, a Mycologist, and also you appear in Leonardo's movie as well. Paul, how is saving old-growth forests a national defense issue?
Well, that's an interesting question. I've been under contract with the U.S. BioShield Biodefense Program for the past 4 years, and I have a very eclectic culture collection of fungi from all over the world, and particularly the old-growth forest. We've submitted over 300 samples to the BioShield program, and the results came back about 2 years ago, and I'm allowed to speak about this. There's a vetted press release and an interview with the BioShield program on NPR and myself and the former assistant director of the FDA. One of the mushrooms exclusive to the old-growth forest, which is called agaricon, is active against pox viruses. Now, those of us...
Wait a minute. You have a mushroom that is associated with these trees that grow in old-growth forests. They interact with the root systems of the trees, right?
Well, it's actually probably an endophytic fungus that infuses the stems and the leaves. It's not quite understood.
Mm-hmm.
This mushroom is now thought to be extinct in Europe because they don't have old-growth forests. We do. Oregon, Washington, and British Columbia has this very unusual polypore mushroom. This is a mushroom that's a hard wood conch.
Mm-hmm.
And our tests, the BioShield program has been funded with several billion dollars per year to help stave off threats from bioterrorists, in particular viruses. And
so we have an antiviral mushroom.
There's a mushroom that has a unique antiviral properties, in particular against pox viruses, including smallpox.
Wow.
Now, this is a bridge argument, and I believe that we should save the old-growth forest as a matter of national defense. We don't know why this mushroom is active against pox viruses. The fact that we have an old-growth forest and Osama bin Laden does not is something that, you know, is essential to our national security. But moreover, pox viruses don't care if you're Republican or Democrat. Pox viruses don't care if there's a border. So it's an international issue. And our government suffers from a form of schizophrenia, I think. There's really great people in the U.S. Defense Department, and their mission is to protect the public. There is, unfortunately, a draconian decision tree that has been established with the U.S. government that if there was a smallpox outbreak, and those of us born after 1980, essentially, 1968, and then 1980 was the last vaccinations, we're totally susceptible to pox infections. And the draconian decision tree is if there was a smallpox outbreak, by executive order, all Americans would have to be vaccinated. Unfortunately, the vaccines may not work, and those who are immunocompromised, especially AIDS patients, if they would take this vaccine, it would be like a form of Russian roulette. And if they avoided the vaccine, then they could become typhoid Marys, which means that we could become incubators for the virulent strains of smallpox. This is a horrible scenario, but most of the researchers in the know, including the people that I'm associated with, strongly believe there's a viral storm on the horizon. It's coming. We're surprised, just like before 9/11, why hadn't we been attacked before? Well, that same sort of thinking is pervasive now in the U.S. in the U.S. Defense Department and NIAID. And as we see these floods and the climate change and the increase and what's happening in Ohio right now, you know, floods carry bacteria. Bacteria can carry viruses. They're called bacteriophages. And the foot and mouth viral epidemic that has been released in England came from a biohazard storage research facility whose septic system flooded, apparently, and flooded an organic farmer who had cows next door. And that virus has not been seen since 1968. Well, think about hospital and their septic systems and the floods that are happening in Ohio. You know, as the ecosystem is being threatened due to all these other forces that the 11th hour speaks about, you know, epidemics are going to come out of nature. And they're going to be the result, really, of many of the insults that we've placed on the ecosphere.
Yeah, well, things like Ebola, I mean, we're virtually unknown. Apparently the virus has been around forever. It's just that we had never invaded its domain as humans went more and more into virgin territories that typically had not been populated by humans. The metaphor is made in the movie, and I think it's a good one, that that the biosphere, that the world is a single organic system, that everything that is produced as waste by anything on Earth, with the single exception of us and our economy, anything that's produced as waste is actually the food for something else. And that's how that little blue marble can float through space and be a complete self-sustaining system. And, you know, as a human being, we can operate with missing a leg or missing an arm or missing an eye or even missing a kidney. But there's a certain critical threshold, a certain critical mass where if you crash enough of the body simply stops working. One of your primary theses, as I take it, Paul Stamets, fungi.com, is that a large part of the biosphere that most of us are completely ignoring is mushrooms, fungus, you know, fungi. They're almost invisible, I think, to most people.
Well, it's invisible.
Beyond portobellos, you know.
Right, exactly. There's a sort of mushroom prejudice, and when people mention mushrooms, they think of magic mushrooms or portobellos, and it's kind of a hard stumbling block for me to overcome. Most people don't realize that fungi were the first organisms on land. They came out of the oceans 1.3 billion years ago. Plants followed 600 million years later. There's a
Wow.
unique fossil called Prototaxites that's recently been in the Journal of Geology. And 420 million years ago, the tallest organism on land was a 30-foot-tall mushroom. And the forests at that time were greater than 2 feet high. So people don't realize that we have a more common ancestry with fungi than we do with any other kingdom, and actually we evolved from fungi. Fungi are the grand molecular disassemblers of nature. They build soil. We are dependent upon soils. And really the sort of take-home message here is that as we lose these allies in the soil that give us life, we could cross a threshold below which the ecosystem could unravel, and the larger mammals will be the first ones to suffer. And we're really talking about a potential of our own impending extinction, as you projected out, you know, 1,000 or more years. And this is something that people should be really concerned about. What I like about the 11th hour is there's a chorus of experts who are unified in their opinion that our descendant generations are absolutely dependent upon our activities now, and we are at the tipping point where we can make a difference. It's our responsibility to leave this earth in a better state than which we inherited it. And I think that's really important. And people who are very ecologically myopic, who just look at short-term gains and short-term vision, really need to take a step back and realize that their ancestors were better custodians of this ecosystem than we are today. And we need to take note of that and make sure that our downstream effects are positive.
Right. 20 some odd tons, or 30, I guess it's 33 tons of waste to produce one ton of consumer goods in our economy. It's mind-boggling, and the consequence that this is having we just have a minute left here, Paul. Most people think that forests are forests, that they kind of stand alone the same way a wheat field does. Neither actually though stands alone. Both require fungi and bacteria.
That's true. We have, you know, two asteroid impacts, 250 million and 65 million years ago, shrouded the earth in dust, and 90% of the species died off, including most plants. Fungi inherited the earth. The organisms that joined in symbiosis with fungi survived. And so the course of evolution on this planet has been through symbioses with fungi and bacteria. And this is the mantle upon which we walk. And this is very important that we protect.
Isn't the largest living thing on Earth a massive fungus?
Yes, in eastern Oregon. It's a 2,200-acre mycelial mat that is only one cell wall thick, but it's the largest organism on Earth that's been so far found.
Right.
And there's a lot more to this subject, but please come to the Egyptian at 7 o'clock tonight for you Seattleites, and I'll be speaking briefly, and there'll be a question and answer period afterwards.
Yeah, should be a lot of fun for the show. Into the 11th hour, Paul Stamets and his website, fungi, F-U-N-G-I, .com?
.com.
There you go. Paul, thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank
you.
Thank you, Tom.
16 minutes past the hour.
Hartman Program, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. This is Air America Radio.
We were hiking past the White House late one night when our eyes beheld an eerie sight. The president appeared with folks very strange, the zombies and vampires of global climate change. It's not global warming, say oil company disciples. Our math tells us it's natural weather cycles. These claims from industry heavies, let the president rest behind his own protective levees. They're doing the climate mash. Real science is bad. Solutions are trash. And they do it for the cash. The creatures were having fun. Our Congress was overrun. We couldn't tell the mindless zombies from the elected ones. Now we can stop this. We have the technology. But first we have to get past industry ideology. We need your help. I'm glad to show you how. Tell your leaders in Washington to save our climate now.
You're doing a heck of a job, zombie. Hey, the snow melted. Great. So we can drill over here. Yeehaw. And here. And here. And here.
Yes. Indeed. That actually is Boris Pickett. Bobby Pickett, I think it is. The guy who did the original Monster Mash. He's got this new piece out. It's amazing. 1-866-303-2270. Anything Goes Friday. Your calls on any topic. Quinn in Sunnyvale, California. Hey, Quinn.
Hi. How are you doing, Tom?
Just great, but I'll get better. What's up?
Well, you know, I was just listening to your caller, your guest that you had on, which was great. I mean, it's as a science, I'm just a you know, science student myself, and just to be able to listen to an expert like that on something as fascinating as fungus is actually kind of cool. But I'm calling about kind of, you know, the idea of, you know, how awful our environment has been coming and just how it's being wrecked. It's kind of scary what's going on. I think the reason why people kind of are okay with it or complacent, a lot of people are, is the idea that they just have no clue as to the length of time that the Earth has been in existence. You know, for so many people, the Earth has only been around, you know, since the beginning of man. But when we think about it, the beginning of the universe even, our significance is so little, yet the impact that we have is so great. And I think if people were able to actually understand, you know, how long it took for us to get where we are today, where we actually have such a complex being as a human, they wouldn't be so careless in what they did.
You know? Now, good point, well made, Quinn. And in the context of that, let me just share with you very quickly a story from the Waco Tribune, Waco, Texas, you know, down near where George has his little hobby ranch. Bill Nye, you know the science guy, Bill Nye, the harmless children's edutainer, edutainer known as the science guy, managed to offend a group of adults in Waco, Texas at a presentation when he suggested that the moon does not emit light but instead reflects the light of the sun. As even most elementary school graduates know, the moon reflects the light of the sun but produces no light of its own. But don't tell that to the good people of Waco, who were visibly angered by what some perceived as irreverence, according to the Waco Tribune. Nye was in town to participate in the McLennan Community College's Distinguished Lecture Series. He gave two lectures on such unfunny and adult topics as global warming, Mars exploration, and energy consumption. But nothing got people as riled up as when he brought up Genesis 1:16, which says, God made two great lights, the greater light to govern the day and the lesser light to govern the night. He also made the stars. The lesser light, he pointed out, is not a light at all, but only a reflector. At this point, several people in the audience stormed out in fury. One woman yelled, "We believe God!" and left with three children, thus ensuring that people across America would read about the incident and conclude that Waco is as wacko as we'd always suspected. Incredible.
Well, you know, I mean, my grandparents are devout Catholics. However, I mean, they understand. I mean, I was talking to my grandfather about the evolution of human, and the question he posed to me was, you know, of course, well, if there's humans, why are there apes still in trees, and why haven't they evolved into humans? And, you know, I explained, you know, the distance of how long the Earth has been around and how long the process of evolution is, and just I think people need to have an open mind. I mean, he understood it, and he accepted what I was talking about, and it just people close their minds, and they're taught to close their minds, where just, you know, only one answer is the right answer, which I think is probably the big problem. You know, the only answer is consumer goods, so we're going to keep making that 12 cents of waste.
Yep, well said. Quinn, thanks a lot for the call. Scott in Cleveland, Ohio. Hey, Scott.
Hello, Tom. Good to talk to you. I have a short rant on the Democrats. I would like to put the lie to this thing about they can't get anything passed because they don't have a supermajority. The Republicans just last week, without any majority whatsoever, passed the most constitution-shredding, civil liberties-destroying bill you've ever seen handwritten by the administration. How did they do it? They don't have any kind of majority. This other thing about impeachment as a weapon.
Well, hang on. The way that they did it was they peeled off some Democrats from the Democratic coalition. And the way the Democrats had been unable to do that prior to that, when the Republicans controlled the House and the Senate, is that any Republican who dared vote with the Democrats got trashed. I mean, they knew that their own party would actually run them out of office. The Republican Party is run like the, you know, La Buscia Nostra, and the Democratic Party is run like a political party.
The Republicans would have never let two choices of bills on the floor. That would have prevented all of that. Why did Harry Reid let the Republican version even on the floor?
Yeah, well,
that
is a question that I would love to hear Harry Reid
answer. The Republicans would have never let a Democrat version on the floor, would they? No.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right, Scott. And Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi hopefully are going to correct this god-awful mistake as soon as Congress comes back into session. 27 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
In olden days, a glimpse of stocking was looked on as something shocking. Now heaven knows anything goes.
Anything goes. Friday. calls any topic. You want to talk about pigeons? You want to talk about fungi? You want to talk about politics? You want to talk about science? You want to talk about psychotherapy? You want to tell a good joke? Roman in Long Island, New York. Hey, Roman.
Hello. How are you?
I am fine. How are you on this
good day? Actually, I was hoping to get in to get in while Senator Sanders was still available. But what I found fascinating is the conversation in terms of national health, I guess universal health care, however you want to look at it. You know, one of the things that's fascinating is that we're almost over designing the system again. You know, one of the things that's fascinating and needs to be remembered is that government pays close to 90% of all health care now. So to suggest that we don't have a social system is simply incorrect. We have
how can that be when they're pulling, you know, $5,000-$6,000 a year out of my paycheck for my health care?
My employer. Right. You're one of the more unusual ones. The reality is that if you look at schools, you know, everybody who walks into my practice is either a teacher or a police officer. Some governmental body somewhere is paying for it.
Well, about a third of the workforce in the United States is people who work for some governmental body, but that doesn't mean that government is paying for their health care. It means that an employer that happens to be government is paying for their health care.
That's correct. So if you include Medicare on top of it and Medicaid, those are also covered.
But, I mean, government, in those cases, the health care that they're paying for could be Blue Cross Blue Shield or it could be Kaiser or it could be, you know.
That name is irrelevant, however. And so to suggest somehow that they need to redesign the system and say, okay, fine, we're going to go ahead and simply do away with the middleman and say, guess what, we don't need Blue Cross to deliver the medical care. We just need some governmental body. Can use CMS as a name and say, fine, let them handle.
Why not just say everybody in America is now eligible for Medicare? Period.
But that's really what we're saying, isn't it?
Yeah, because, I mean I think that's the simple solution. It's
right.
Medicare for all.
Yeah, well, I think that's true. I mean the new I think in the S-CHIP bill, the House has passed to do away with the Medicare Advantage that private insurance companies get, which I think is perfectly reasonable.
Right, which is only going to hurt mostly the company that paid Bill McGuire $1.7 billion in compensation, and AARP, who's making a nice, tidy little profit off selling and reselling health insurance.
Absolutely.
Policies.
I've always wondered why I can't get the same sort of gig, though.
Yeah, gig has, the $1.7 billion is Bill McGuire?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's which raises the interesting question of why is it, if there really is a marketplace and if there really is a matter of supply and demand, then why is it that any corporation would have to pay $1 billion or, for that matter, $100 million or, for that matter, even $5 million a year to somebody to be their CEO? You would think that it would be so competitive that there'd be a lot of people out there who'd say, oh, he'll do it for five. I'll do it for four and a half. And it's one of two things. Either it's an old boy system and a network that is protecting its own, and it really isn't a marketplace, as it were, or the job of being a CEO requires a skill set and a sociopathology or psychopathology that is relatively rare, like being a sociopath, being able to lay off people and still go to bed at night and sleep. And I'm starting to incline toward that latter description.
Well, I actually still lean towards your initial issue, which is that there is no such thing as a free market.
Yeah.
Because if you look at the insurance regulations that are in place versus, I mean, the suggestion somehow that physicians can simply charge whatever they want, that's clearly not the case. And, you know, even the insurance companies go ahead and look at Medicare as being their base rate. This is what Medicare is willing to charge. This is what we're going to pay.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So the free market idea just is simply out the window.
Yeah.
And so it's ludicrous when you have other conservatives on who basically go on and on about the free market system. We don't have that.
Right. They ain't no such thing. Good point, Roman. And in fact, my wife got a letter last week from our health insurance company, saying one of the medications that you are taking is too expensive. You have 60 days to talk to your doctor and have your doctor write a prescription for another drug, another pharmaceutical, another medication that does the same thing but doesn't cost as much as this one. I mean, that's how weird it's getting. Patients are being told to talk to their doc. I mean, it's absolutely bizarre. Bill in Portland, Oregon, listening on KPOJ. Hey, Bill.
How are you?
Fine. What's up?
There was an article in Science a couple months ago. Basically, it was discussing why certain people are resistant to scientific explanations.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave many examples, but it was any time this group of people, this is about the Waco people that you were talking about a little while ago.
Right, who got all freaked out because Bill Nye said that the moon reflects light rather than, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
The bottom line is, any time it goes against sort of basic human intuition, this group gets frightened.
Mm-hmm.
And if it isn't, obviously the theory of relativity goes against basic human day-to-day observation, and therefore these people would be frightened about it. But the idea that a planet could reflect light or a celestial body goes against human intuition, and these people become frightened.
Yeah, good point, Bill. And in fact, I take it a step beyond that and say people vote based on emotion. People make decisions, by and large, based on emotion. And that's where, to some extent, not entirely, but to some extent, the Kerry campaign failed. Again, I still continue to believe that John Kerry won the election and that John Edwards really is the rightfully elected vice president of the United States at this moment, although they've been very, very, very rapidly destroying those records in Ohio, so we may never find out. Unlike Florida, where we actually did find out that Bush did not win the Florida election by any count, by any standard. It was reported in the New York Times and other newspapers across the country. But nonetheless, people make their decisions based on emotions. And so if you can figure out a way to tie an emotion, a strong emotion, to an issue, then you can get people fired up about that issue. And even if it's a seemingly irrelevant issue, it's you know, burning the flag, right? It's not a big deal. This year it was a big deal during the election of Bush 1. It's, you know, what they've done on the Reich is a very good job of picking the issue du jour and then cranking it up to the point where everybody's hysterical about it like it's some big hit, but because they tie an emotion to it. And we've got some real issues here that have some real emotions. I mean, people are dying as a result of lack of health care. People are being thrown out of their homes because of deregulation of the banking industry. People are being wiped out for their entire lives because of debt acquired by just simply going to college. When it used to be that you could go to college for free or you could work your way through college with a, you know, a basic minimum wage job. The poverty is increasing. It's just, you know, right across the board. I mean, yesterday in the San Francisco paper, this was just an incredible statistic. From 1979 to 2006, the hourly pay of California's low-wage workers fell by 7.2%. High-wage workers saw gains of 18.4%, while those exactly in the middle edged up only 1%, 1.3%. The richest Californians are capturing a growing share of wealth. Income reported for tax purposes of the top 1% of the state's taxpayers jumped 107%. During the Bush years, well, from 1995 to 2005, after adjustment for inflation. During the same time, income for the middle fifth of taxpayers rose only 9.3%. And 43.1% of California's job growth occurred among jobs at the lowest 20% of the pay scale, 54% of the new jobs, the top 40% only. Now, you look at the people between the 20 and the 60% of the pay scale, the middle of the pay scale, only 2.6% of job growth. And there I am talking about statistics again. And, you know, as I said, it should be. So the bottom line is America's middle class is being wiped out. It's ceasing to exist. We're having the upper and the you know the upper middle class, the nouveau riche, and the very rich are growing like crazy and doing very well, and poor people in America are growing like crazy, and it's a disaster. It's an absolute disaster for them. Bonnie in Bergenstown, Pennsylvania. Hey, Bonnie, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom. Yesterday you had a caller who said that the reason the cons are spending $15 million to push this progress is being made in Iraq propaganda was a response to the Iraq summer campaign. And I was thinking the same thing. I didn't have an opportunity to call in, but that's what I wanted to say. Because the Iraq Summer Campaign has come to my congressional district, represented by Timmy Murphy, who locks his constituents out of his office because we disagree with him about his rubber stamp position on the occupation.
Is Timmy Murphy a Republican?
Oh, yeah. Yes. And then he also calls the police whenever we're peacefully protesting outside of his office, and they try to tell us that we can't put their images up on YouTube.
Well, this is because Republicans essentially don't believe in small-D democracy. They want to have a kingdom. They want to have control. They want, you know, as Chris Matthews pointed out the other day, Republicans are looking for a leader. Democrats want to have a meeting. Democrats believe in democracy. Democrats believe in hearing what everybody has to say and arriving at a consensus. Republicans want some strong authority figure to say, this is the way to go, follow me.
Right.
And we've seen how that worked out in Franco's Italy and Mussolini's, excuse me, Franco's Spain.
I know, Franco's Spain and Mussolini's Italy. Well, it's both funny and pathetic because most of us protesters are middle-aged and elderly, and yet they're treating us like we're kids.
Yeah.
But I wanted to ask you one quick question on a different issue about Darfur. I was wondering what you thought about that large underground lake that they found under it, because that could resolve that crisis, because it's all about water shortage. And I'm worried about troops being sent in to protect the profits of privatizers.
Right. To some extent, Bonnie. I don't know enough about that lake to be able to intelligently comment on it. 45 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. Viagra for your brain. On Air America Radio. Call 866-303-2270.
Nobody knows if it's something to bless or to blame.
Slightly unbalanced. Tom Harvard here with you. 9.5 minutes before the hour. Tim in Glendale. Oh, hang on just a second, Tim. We have Ellen Ratner on the line. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service on the line with us. Hey, Ellen.
Well, hi. Peter Pace looks like he's going out, but with a bang. Everybody thought the guy absolutely had no spine whatsoever. And now it looks as if he is going to tell the president before he leaves, at about the same time the Petraeus report is coming, that they ought to reduce half of all troops by 2008.
Maybe just in time for the elections in 2008?
Well, maybe, but Peter Pace is usually a guy that toes the line, but I guess he's getting a little spine as he's leaving, which means that Bush is getting advice. The only people that give Bush the advice to stay are the people that have jobs.
Sure. And the people who are giving him advice to stay are the people who are affiliated with big corporations that are making a pile of money on our staying there. But I'm wondering if the Republican strategists, and I don't for a minute think that Karl Rove is no longer one of them, are looking at this situation and saying, if we want Republicans, particularly with the House of Representatives, because every single member of the House of Representatives is up for re-election next year, if we want Republicans to win some, you know, House seats and some Senate seats and maybe the White House, we've got to reduce U.S. troop levels and casualty levels in Iraq. And the easy way to do that is to have somebody like Petraeus come along and say, you know, well, this is what we should do, so that Bush can say, you know, I always do listen to my commanders. My commanders are now saying everything's so good that we can reduce our troop levels. They're going to do what the famous advice given to Lyndon Johnson, declare victory and go home.
That would be a sane political strategy, but I'm not sure Petraeus is going to recommend that. See, I think Pace has nothing to lose at this point because he's going bye-bye, and I think he can recommend it. And Petraeus, I think, may still recommend that we keep the troop level up there.
Hmm.
Now, what's also interesting is that Haley Barbour, my buddy Haley Barbour's old lobbying firm, of which Haley Barbour has nothing to do with anymore, Barbour, Griffin, and Rogers, is lobbying against al-Maliki and is lobbying for Alawi.
Right, and there's where is the $300,000 coming from to pay for, you know, promoting Alawi is the darling of the neocons, and you know al-Maliki was not elected. He replaced the guy whose name escapes me at the moment, who was actually elected. So we're talking about, what, our third puppet prime minister now? This is starting to look like, you know, the Diem and then who it was and who it was and who it was in Vietnam kind of thing.
Exactly. I don't know who's behind that, but we do know who's behind freedomswatch.org. This is Sheldon Adelson from Boston of the Venetian, who owns the Venetian, or did own the Venetian. I think he still does own the Venetian in Las Vegas. And he's the guy that's behind Freedom's Watch ads that have been all over the place. I mean, as you know, I'm recovering from surgery, so I'm listening to the news without watching it, and all I hear are those darn ads.
Hmm. Interesting.
And they're all over the place, and they're doing radio buys as well. I'm sure they haven't come to Air America yet with a radio buy.
Right. Right.
That's not where they're going to go. Few other interesting things, and I think this is pretty interesting. It looks like finally Kennedy is getting it on the mine safety issue, and they're going to have hearings on mine safety right after they come back from the recess on the 5th of September. And this Robert Murray, who owns the mine that was in so much trouble, you know, was touting his safety record at that particular mine. But his safety record at the other mines that he owns is a disaster, an abomination. It's terrible.
Well, and his safety record at this mine doesn't seem all that great if 9 people are dead.
Well, obviously, but we're talking about the safety mine the safety
right.
reports pre this. But in his other mines, a complete disaster.
Interesting. And it took, you know, the what I think is the most interesting part of that is that it took 13 days for CNN to report that.
Right. Well, yes. And even as much as I like Senator Kennedy, for them to say, we're going to have hearings ASAP. This is ridiculous. What is going on here? Another oversight issue.
Right.
And one other thing that is going on is the president next week is going to be addressing the American Legion in Reno, Nevada. He's going to be making another Iraq, why we need to be there speech, and another why it connects to every other war and Mideast peace.
Oh, man.
We have something to look forward to on August 28th.
Yeah, one of the things that has occurred to me is what would have happened in Vietnam if we had, quote, won, end quote. Let's say that we had actually stopped the North Vietnamese like we did the North Koreans and, you know, installed a puppet government in the South. What would the effect of that have been? You know, could it have been, you know, something stable like Korea, or would it have totally destabilized the area? Is there any kind of consensus on that? Has anybody ever, you know, war-gamed that out?
You know, I've certainly done, as you have done, a lot of reading. That was the year I grew up, and curious, but I just have no idea. And the question is, not only might what have done to, as you mentioned, the Vietnam issues, but what would have happened, would have Cambodia had even been worse than it was with 3 million dead.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. The Cambodian disaster. I mean, we just, much like we've done now in Iraq, we opened the gates of hell in Southeast Asia. And all because Lyndon Johnson thought it would be politically useful for him. He wanted to make his stand against communism somewhere in the world, and he was afraid to do it in Cuba because he thought that Khrushchev would unloose nukes on him if he did. And he might have been right. But not right to go into Vietnam. That was a bad, bad decision. Anyhow, Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Ellen, always fascinating talking with you. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great weekend.
You too. 57 minutes past the hour. Back with your calls. Anything goes Friday. Tom Hartman here with you on Air America Radio, tomhartman.com, airamerica.com. Drop by our live chat room and say hi.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio. You're tuned into the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Talk radio for the rest of us.
And welcome back to our third hour. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from San Francisco today from the Quake. And quakeradio.com. And tonight we'll be at the... where to go here? I'll be at the San Francisco Landmark Embarcadero downtown at the 7:30 showing. Afterwards, doing a short question and answer, because I do have to clear the theater and get it ready for the next showing. Drop by and say hi. Look forward to seeing you there. Texas has carried out its 400th execution. This via the Telegraph in the UK. Crooks and Liars, it's the top story over there. A man convicted of shooting dead a store clerk during a robbery has become the 400th person to be executed by Texas since the U.S. Supreme Court reinstated capital punishment in 1976. That southern state accounts for almost a third of the 1,091 American executions over the last three decades, and this year it will be responsible for almost two-thirds, 21 out of 35 judicial killings so far. This guy has never confessed to the crime. He went to his death insisting he was innocent. They note over at Democratic Underground, George Bush has turned the killing of human beings into an art form, so it comes as no surprise that he and Alberto Gonzalez are attempting to fast-track executions nationwide by doing away with the appeals process for death row inmates. And I just have to say, I think that this is just so absolutely wrong that we're killing people. And what I don't in particular, I mean, you know, certainly there are some people who need to be segregated from society forever. But what kind of message does this send to say, you know, yeah, killing's a fine thing. Killing's just A-okay. No problem if you kill people. Because the state does it. We, the state, are killing people. There has never been any demonstration that killing people reduces crime. It's not a deterrent. And if we are using this as a form of revenge, if these are revenge killings, this is appealing to and training our children in our basest instincts. And this is why European countries have rejected the death penalty, as has Canada and Mexico. And they look at us and they say, I'm not sure about Mexico, but certainly as has Canada. And they look at us and go, this is sick. This is sick and twisted. Particularly when, for example, in Illinois, the governor of Illinois said, that's it, I'm not going to sign any more death warrants, because they discovered that so many people who were actually innocent had been put to death. State-sanctioned killings. And here's the amazing thing. The same conservatives who don't trust the government to be able to deliver health care, oh, I'd never trust them to do that. You know, you can't trust the government to do anything right. They'll trust the company, or they'll trust the government to put people to death. Amazing. Anyhow, anything goes Friday. Let's take your calls. 1-866-303-2270, our phone number. Jeff in San Diego, listening on KLSD. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, how's it going, Tom? To start off with, I want to tell you I'm a fan of your books. I just got done reading On Equal Protection. I've also read Screwed and have recently purchased a copy of We the People, What Would Jefferson Do, and The Last Days of Ancient Sunlight. Those are on my reading list.
Well, thank you, Jeff. My publishers, thank you.
But I wanted to call, get a question into Senator Sanders. And maybe
you hurt my feelings here, Jeff. You didn't want to talk to me.
Well, sure. I mean, well, maybe you can answer part of this. I'm aware of Dennis Kucinich's impeachment bill 333, which has, I think, like
against Dick Cheney, not George Bush, right?
Well, impeachment of somebody, anybody at this point in time would be a step forward. But, you know, that's only got like 20 signatures on it and is going absolutely nowhere. And I was wanting to know if there was a companion bill in the Senate, because I understand that's a House bill.
There is not. I can tell you there is not. And
there's not.
No, not to the best of my knowledge. I mean, maybe something has happened recently that I didn't know about. But I generally keep up pretty good on this stuff, and as far as I know, there is not. And the broad consensus among the Democrats in the House and Senate, and Bernie shares this opinion, and I disagree with it, frankly. It's one of those very few areas where he and I have a difference of opinion. But they may well be right. I just don't know. I mean, these guys, they do politics for a living, And I just, you know, look at it and talk about it. I'm not inside, you know, on the inside, but they're of the opinion that if they go after impeaching Bush or Cheney, that it will actually help the Republican Party. In the elections of 2008. And you know, part of their argument is that Clinton's popularity went up, in although it didn't seem to help, you know, hurt the Democrats in the election of 2000. I just, you know, I don't get the political calculus of it, but they've got experts and professionals who do this kind of stuff, and they just, and frankly, I think that that's a lousy reason not to do it. I think that, you know, if you take a vow to uphold the Constitution and you know, against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that and we have a domestic enemy to the Constitution, George W. Bush and Dick Cheney, a pair of them, and Alberto Gonzalez. I mean, these guys, and many Republicans, frankly, in the House and Senate. I mean, maybe it's that they'd have to impeach so many of their peers, because it's not just Bush and Cheney. I mean, there's this whole Republican support group for this stuff. And in my opinion, they have committed crimes against the Constitution, and the remedy for that is impeachment. And in that regard, I absolutely agree with conservatives like Bruce Fein, you know, who's been on this program and talked about it. Dave in St. Paul, Nebraska. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Finally made it.
Yeah. Thank you for waiting.
I want to know you're the most quoted man in my household.
Thank you. What's up?
What I want to know is an update on the July 17th executive order blocking property of peaceniks, actually.
Well, it's now law.
Yeah, is anything being said, done, anything?
To the best of my knowledge, no. And that would have been a good question to ask Bernie.
Yeah.
Hopefully next week. But as far as I know, no. And you know, it's another chink in the wall. I mean, this is another piece of legislation, or it's not a piece of legislation. It's an executive order. We talked with Marjorie Cohen about this on Thursday or Wednesday of this week, as I recall. And, you know, her point that executive orders have no constitutional basis. They have no legal basis. There hasn't been legislation passed that empowers them. The Congress has the ability to say no more executive orders. Then it would go to the Supreme Court. And, you know, but, you know, Democrats as well as Republicans, I mean, Franklin Roosevelt did a lot of the good stuff that he did by executive order. And so, you know, that they want to keep that in place. But this executive order from July 17th that said that anybody who is determined by Bush to be supporting terrorists in some way can basically suddenly become financially a non-person. Your credit card stops working, your checking account is frozen, you can't take money out of the bank, you can't pay your bills. I mean, it would, in this country, it would destroy somebody. And, you know, the assurance is, oh, we're just going to use this against the terrorists. And yeah, we've heard that before. That's what Nixon was saying. Oh, we're only going to wiretap those people who are collaborating with the North Vietnamese. And then they're wiretapping, you know, George McGovern's office. Come on, give me a break. Roger in Rhode Island. Hey, Roger, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. It's a pleasure to talk to you. I was wondering who Jesus would execute, but that's beside the point.
Yeah. Well, I think we know the answer would be nobody, but yeah.
I have a suggestion for your listeners. For the next couple of weeks leading up to the Petraeus hearings, when I know who is going to be, what committees he's going to be appearing before, I'm going to contact all the Democratic and independent members of those committees, and I'm going to urge them to publicly, on record, ask General Petraeus why he supports the surge when he is the one who wrote the counterinsurgency manual for the U.S. Army, which stated that a minimum of 40 to 50 a minimum of one soldier on the ground for every 40 to 50 civilians was the only way to either put down an insurgency or to have control of a country.
Yeah, and that's during time of war. That was actually to take control in the consequence of a war. And really what we have here now is a failed occupation. It's not a failed war. And it's not a war that's going south. It's an occupation that's going south. And it's because occupations work if you rebuild infrastructure, if you give them electricity, if you help people get jobs, if you put their health care system back in place, if you put their education system back in place, Iraq could have been put back together very quickly as a functioning country. But no, these conservatives had to try out their bizarre ideas, their flat taxes, and they're doing away with unions, and this is the result.
Now back to the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
And welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. Hey, a shout out to Patty. I don't know if she wants her last name on the air, so I'm not going to toss it out there. But she sent a note. Winning the water cooler wars goes airborne. Just wanted to thank Tom for arming me against the right-wing nuts. She says, I was sitting next to someone on a plane this week who started ranting to me against immigration because the airline had the nerve to give the safety announcements in Spanish. I suggested that the problem could be solved by huge fines to employers of illegal immigrants, which really took the wind out of his sails. He then insisted we needed to build a wall between us and Mexico. I wondered, why would we need a wall if there were no jobs? Who would come here? He then started going off on how the Democrats want illegals to get the vote. Huh? Again, I told the guy, that's a Fox News straw man. I can swear to you that there's not a single Democratic or liberal organization that's promoting votes for non-citizens. Not one. And anyone who says that, and I'm assuming you got that from Fox, is just setting up a straw man. She says, I learned that from your show, too. Lastly, he went off on voter fraud and how Daley got Kennedy elected. Actually, let me just pause the note here. Even if John Kennedy had lost Chicago, he would have won the presidency. So that is, by the way, a vanishing hitchhiker story. But nonetheless, Patty says, I said, you mean the way Chuck Hagel used his own voting machines to get elected against the odds and against the polling numbers in Nebraska? He sputtered a little and went off on voter fraud. And I said, don't you mean voter disenfranchisement? I'd like to say that finished it. But then he decided to attack my news source, the New York Times. I said it wasn't my news source because they lied us into a war. So I tended to get my information from Air American liberal blogs, which made him turn pale and almost faint. After that, he stuck to less controversial topics, like his Russian girlfriend, obtained by mail order, I'm sure, thanks to the Tom Hartman Show for giving me the tools to stand up to idiots like this. You're welcome. 1-866-303-2270. Scott in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Scott.
Hey, good afternoon, Tom. We're getting bombarded with the Freedom Watch commercials here.
Yeah.
And just for a lark, I called them this morning, and the first—
Did you call that toll-free number that they're giving out?
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
And the first thing they do is ask you if you think that leaving the war in Iraq will bring terrorism to America. And, of course, I said no. They said thank you for your call and hung up on me.
Ha! And so, if you had said yes, then they would have said, who's your member of Congress? Let us connect you to them.
That's exactly what I did the next time I called back and said, yes, I support it. And they give you their political viewpoint and ask you your zip code and who your congressman is. And or if you don't know one, they're happy to connect you with one that's voting against them. And it's just hilarious that you have a group called Freedom Watch, but yet you are not free to oppose them.
Yeah.
So they will not connect you to your congressman if you oppose their views.
Yeah, if you call their toll-free number at 877-222-8001 and say, no, that's fascinating. Fascinating. Thanks for the info, Scott. I was thinking of calling that number myself just out of curiosity, but you've satisfied my curiosity. Michael in Los Angeles, California. Hey, Michael.
Hey, how are you?
Great. What's up?
I'm surprised, but I guess I shouldn't be, that the media hasn't called President Bush out on his remarks with the VFW this week. Such questions as, if we were wrong to leave Vietnam, are you suggesting that Vietnam is a threat today, or do you suggest we begin an embargo and end trade with Vietnam? Are you suggesting that we stop selling military hardware to Vietnam? Are you suggesting that it is a clear and imminent threat to America? Is the Vietnam government our enemy? What exactly are you saying? Because if you're saying that Vietnam, we were wrong to leave, look at the situation today. What are you doing to change it?
I mean, right, it's right. So completely outrageous.
Yeah, no, it absolutely is. And, you know, is Vietnam, you know, coming across the ocean to get us? No, they're a trading partner of ours now. I mean, it's absolutely absurd. Point made, Michael, and made very well. James in Port Orford, Oregon. Hey, James.
How you doing?
Great. What's up?
I've been really stressed out about this executive order that George Bush wrote allows him to declare martial law if we get another attack.
Actually, you know, the first one of that variety was by Richard Nixon, so this is not something new.
Well, it gives
what has given power to Bush that Nixon didn't have is the Military Commissions Act and the John Warner Defense Appropriations Act, which did away with posse comitatus and essentially did away with habeas corpus. So now our own army can be used against us, we the people, as if we were the enemy. Whereas ever since 1787 or 1778, whenever posse comitatus was passed, you know, the idea was, you know, we had a civil war, we had an army being used against civilians in the United States. It's never going to happen again. And that has been undone. That was undone last year by the Republicans in Congress.
Mm. Well, George Bush has been on camera when he said he'd like to be the dictator of this country, and yep. I have a feeling that he's going to declare the 2008 elections null and void.
Yeah, I understand your concern, James. I don't think that that's going to happen. I really don't think that that's possible. It's there really still are patriots in America, and there really still are people in Congress who will stand up and speak out. There still are Americans. And frankly, and here's I guess the good news, there's as many people on the right, and particularly the far right, who are now very concerned about this. I mean, you get Michael Savage, who's going off on George Bush all the time about this very issue. I think this is an American issue. This is not a political issue.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Anything goes.
Anything goes. She. Yeah. Thank you very much. Anything goes. Tom Hartman here with you on Air America. 866-303-2270. Joe in San Francisco. Hey, Joe. What's up?
Hello. How are you? Can you hear me?
Fine. Yeah, I can. Yeah, you're on the air.
I'm calling kind of reluctantly. Kind of acting as a proxy whistleblower because I live in the San Francisco Bay Area, and in the San Francisco Bay Area, we not only have the quake, but we also have the famous Sequoia voting systems. Well, I happen to have a close relative who has worked for Sequoia for nearly 10 years. Well, there's a lot of information that this member and my family has passed on to me that's disturbing that hasn't been made public, and I'm kind of sharing that because I think it needs to be made public. Well, first and foremost, Sequoia now has armed guards outside their building and outside their office suite because of the bomb threats that they've had over the last couple of weeks. But the new information about Sequoia allegedly being responsible for the theft of the election in Florida in 2000. But what's not being reported is that the paper being used for those machines, Sequoia made very clear that that paper had a high defect rate and they did not want to use it. But they were overruled by parties in Florida whom they're not allowed to name.
I understand, but Joe, here's the problem. You're in a position of wanting to share information which is secondhand information about a company that is not here to defend themselves, and that I have no way of knowing whether it's accurate or not, or whether there's any truth to it or not. What I would strongly encourage you to do is have your primary source, your relative, talk to somebody at one of the local newspapers. Or any local journalist, and have them vet the information. But I just don't want to toss something on the air about any company, you know, or any person for that matter, that may end up being libelous, frankly, without having, you know, some assurance that there's some reality to it. And I can't just do that with a phone call. I'm sorry. Tim in Glendale, Arizona. Hey, Tim.
Hi. Hi, Tom. I just want to make this point. This is aimed at you and any members of Congress who may be listening, including Bernie Sanders. Essentially, the courts have ruled that all corporations are persons. So why aren't these persons registering for the draft once they're 18 years of age, like General Motors, Halliburton, Ford, and the rest of them?
Right. Yeah, you know, it really, things like that, and can corporations get married? And, well, yes, actually, they can. It's a corporate merger. Well, can they have polygamous marriages? Can they have multiple partners?
Legally,
apparently, yes.
Why can't they be forced to register for the draft?
Right. No, I mean, you're absolutely right, Tim. And there's that and a whole variety of things point out the absolute absurdity of corporate personhood. You know, a corporation can live forever, but it's a person. Come on, give me a break. And corporations can own other corporations. I thought slavery was illegal. I thought persons can't own persons. So, anyhow, Mike in Eugene, Oregon, listening on KOPT. Hey, Mike.
Hello?
You're on the air.
Hi, how you doing?
Great. What's up?
Hi, I am a biologist, government biologist, for about the last 20 years. And the reason I'm calling is I'm just absolutely amazed. Amazed at the, I don't know if it's incompetence or unwillingness of the press, and I would also say talk radio, and unfortunately I would say liberal talk radio as well, in not including basic facts, particularly scientific facts, when it comes to issues that are in the news. I see it all the time. I particularly see it most so on stories or on issues that I work on. And so I am familiar with all the facts. And then when I listen to talk radio and I
For example,
pardon me?
For example.
A general example would be environmental issues. I can't give you any concrete examples at the moment, it would take too long probably for the air, but I guess what I can say is they are extremely relevant.
Yeah. No. Okay. Well, I get your point, and I agree that science and science education in the United States are at a stage right now that can only be described as a tragedy, and that science in the press is if not close behind, maybe even out ahead of that in terms of the disaster there. Susan in Rhododendron, Oregon.
Yeah.
Hey, Susan. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks a lot for doing this. I can't tell you how much it means to both my husband and myself. Anyway, what I really want to talk about is I got a letter from Al Gore yesterday, and I'm sure thousands or hundreds of thousands of other people got this letter from Al Gore, and he wants me to give money to the DNC.
Right, the Democratic National Committee. This is not the DLC, Conservative Democrats. This is Howard Dean's. Howard Dean is the chairman. This is the official Democratic Party.
Right. Yeah. And we do give money. We give them money when, when I have a few bucks, I toss them some money.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, I'm going to have to send that letter back with a little note that says, on the day that you deliver the bill of impeachment, I will send you $200.
That's a great idea.
But you're not getting a nickel from me until then. And if I was a very clever person, I would set up a website to do that. But I'm not quite that clever.
Yeah.
So I just want to put it out there for consideration that everybody that got this letter needs to send it back with a pledge for when the bills are served.
Yeah, or send it back with $25 and a note saying I'll send another $25 or I'll send $100 or $200 or something. I mean, again, this is let's not entirely kill the messenger. This is why I say instead of calling up our elected officials and just giving them vitriolic hell for the way that they've been voting, instead we need to say, please don't be afraid. We're here with you. We're standing behind you, and we do support you. However, we want you to take the next step. We really and we're there with you. Susan, thank you for the call, and that's an interesting and thought provoking suggestion. Jeff in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Jeff.
Hi. I see one of the major problems we have right now is on all sides of the issue is we live in a theoretical reality. Right? We live in a conceptual world rather than a perceptual world. And we've got the Republicans who completely ignore reality, so of course our ideas are going to fail in Iraq.
Well, that's the nature of politics, Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
Politics is entirely conceptual.
Yeah.
I mean, the consequences are physical. The consequences of the political process are entirely real world. But just even the very idea of politics is
yes. Yeah, so but you conceive abstract of things based on perceptions. You conceive of the future based on perceptions of what has happened.
Right.
On my desk, I've got in big letters, sign that says, be willing to lose. And that's one of the key things I live by in life. You know, go for the truth, go for what you feel is best, but be willing, you know, not just compromising ridiculous. I mean, the Fradycrats right now are paralyzed as everyone's afraid to lose. I mean, they have this you go first mentality where they're always waiting for someone else to act. I mean, they've got a circular parade where everyone is a follower, where the politicians are waiting for the public.
Well, and occasionally, I'm sorry, go ahead, finish your sentence.
Well, the public is waiting for the politicians, and there's a circle of inaction.
Yeah, and occasionally you get somebody like Russ Feingold who goes out and says, okay, you know, let's at least censure this guy, you know, for the crimes he's committed, and he can't even get, you know, the rest of the Senate to go along with him. I think it's an absolute tragedy, but be willing to lose. That's brilliant, Jeff.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. The Democrats really need to stop worrying about public opinion. You're absolutely right. Doug in the Bronx, or in Bronx, New York.
Yes, thank you, Tom. Very good to talk to you. What you're just saying, I agree very much. Very constructive suggestions about sort of a carrot and stick approach with the Democrats, and they have to stop being afraid of their own shadows.
Yeah.
You know, one example on this, by the way, I'm going off my subject, but in the 1980s, I believe there should have been an impeachment on or some kind of censure or something on, because of Iran-Contra on Vice President Bush and Ronald Reagan. And the Democrats said, oh, they are too popular. You know, Reagan is too popular and we'll lose the next election, the 1988 election.
Not only should there have been a censure, there should have been a serious investigation of what happened in the 1980 election. Because when they did, when the Iran-Contra Committee, the legislation that enabled the creation of the Iran-Contra Committee and the Iran-Contra investigation specifically said that they would not look at events that went back that early. And you know, just essentially took off the table the possibility of investigating whether or not a deal had been cut between Bush and probably done by Bill Casey, according to
the
studies,
and
the Iranians to hold the hostages, which is what flipped the election, because
right.
Jimmy Carter was way out ahead until the Iranians took the hostages.
Right. Well, yeah, and I'm thinking of Lawrence Walsh's investigation, which the Democratic Congress, actually beginning in 1987, wasn't really allowing to have the power to do what it needed to do. That's according to Lawrence Walsh's book, Firewall.
Yep.
And they just lost a fantastic opportunity there in 87 and 88 to actually win the 88 election. I always, you know, they lost the 88 election because they didn't bring people to justice that were truly criminals and treasonous, really.
Right.
But I just want to say, you had a caller earlier that brought up about Dennis Kucinich's impeachment bill on Cheney.
Right.
And then I think he asked, is there a companion bill in the Senate?
Right.
Well, there can't be a companion bill in the Senate.
Oh, you're right. You can't impeach in the Senate. The
no.
trial is in the Senate. That's
right.
You're absolutely right. Thank
right.
you. Thank you so much.
Okay.
You know, every now and then I have these duh moments. And
okay.
yeah, no, there, of course there would not be a companion bill because all impeachments originate in the House of Representatives, and impeachment is actually two things. And this
exactly.
is the thing that so few people get. And I so appreciate your pointing it out, Doug. An impeachment in the House of Representatives is A, essentially a criminal indictment. It's like a prosecutor bringing forward a charge. But it's also B, a form of censure. If you go back and you look at Webster's Dictionary from 1773, Samuel Webster's Dictionary from 1773, you look up the word impeachment, the word that the founders and framers were using, it means to indict or to condemn. So it's a condemnation, and then the trial is in the Senate.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, the No Boring Zone, on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them blue for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
A special thanks to Louise Hartman and David Poole producing this program, and Chris Lopresto and Lauren Kirshner in New York at Air America keeping everything alive and running, all the electronics. To Clark here at the Quake, who's running the board over here, and to Sue Nethercutt, who's running our chat room in the UK, or from the UK. It's chat rooms all over the planet. Hey Soup, and all the folks in the chat room, to our sponsors, to our affiliates, and by the way, and to you, the listener. And by the way, if you want to support our affiliates, our radio stations, the way to support them is to patronize their advertisers and help them find advertisers. I mean, that's the bottom line. This is a business, and it lives or dies based on the revenue from advertising. And, you know, people talk about, well, we want to support a radio station. We're going to go out and protest. Well, you know, that's fine, but it'd probably be a whole lot more effective if you got a couple of good advertisers. And there, we have some radio stations that are just doing great, making good money and doing very, very well. And we have others that are struggling. And that seems to be the bottom line, is the ability, the effectiveness of selling advertising. So if you can help, you know, if you know of a good advertiser, let them know, hey, you know, you should be advertising the local progressive station. Alicia in McMinnville, Oregon. Hey, Alicia.
Thank you so much for taking my call, and thank you so much for being the voice to help the American public who's fortunate enough to listen to you to realize the Republican agenda, and that includes some of the larger corporations' agenda, since they lost intelligence since Nixon, as to what they have done to get better since Nixon, how they have improved what they do since Nixon. My main thing is I listen to your program, and I hear so many things I want to respond to, but I want to stay focused on why I'm calling. And one of the reasons I'm calling is the fact that I have lost faith in politicians, and I never thought I would say that. You help me to see the other side and not to allow that to happen. Part of it, I can only start within my own home state of Oregon. And the fact that when a man who believes in our environment, that was my father, who well before Earth Day believed in taking care of our rivers and lakes that he saw as the organs and the veins and the arteries that kept this beautiful planet going. And whatever diseases came into it, if you kept those veins and arteries healthy, the planet would stay healthy because everything that lives off those would be healthy. And this man who in Oregon, because we have a state that I voted for the Death with Dignity Act and the Pain Relief Initiative, which are so important, that this man who served his country in World War II, who got the Silver Medal of Life Saving for saving lives, who believed in saving lives, be it animal, bird, fowl, fish, human, whatever, that this man, when he is lethally overdosed by morphine in a nursing home, nobody in this state seems to care about the seniors. This is not just an Oregon state issue. What is happening to our beautiful seniors and the wisdom that many of them have, and there are some who would say that, well, aren't those older folks the ones that got us in the state we're in? Not my father and many, I'm sure, who are like him.
But Alicia, I'm sorry to hear about your loss, and I understand the issue that you're raising, and I think it raises a larger issue, and that is that we really don't respect elders in the United States in modern culture. I mean, it's all about youth. And I remember when I was in Australia, Jeff Guest, a friend of mine who's half Aboriginal, I asked him, I wanted to meet one of the Aboriginal tribal elders who are still left, and Jeff is one of the few guys who actually knows who they are and where they are. Jeff was one of the stolen generation. He's in his 70s, in his late 70s now. And Jeff took me on a three-day trip through the wilds of northern Australia, of northern Queensland, from Petford up toward the Lockhart River. In fact, we slept overnight on, I think it was the Lockhart River. I remember waking up one morning, and just as a crocodile was about to get me, Jeff had ran up and hit it with a stick. It was a giant crocodile coming out of the river. He sent me a clipping, I don't know, about a year later, of they had finally caught this thing. Apparently, it had been going after people. But in any case, he introduced me to King Tommy George, which is a title, I guess, you know, that the Aboriginals wouldn't have used before European contact. But he was the elder of this community up near the Lockhart River area. And we were sitting, and he, this old man with this giant nimbus of white hair, absolutely white hair, and we're sitting in this dry riverbed, which was his power place, and there were three or four Aboriginal kids squatting around us. You know, we were all just squatting in the dirt, and I was there. I actually have I had a tape recorder and some photos, and he was telling me about the rites of initiation that people in his tribe go through at the different stages of life, you know, at the age of seven, more or less, and at puberty and at marriage and when your first gray hairs appear. And then he says, and then when your last hair turns gray, when all of your hair is white, that's the highest initiation. That's when you get the greatest power, the greatest knowledge. And I said, wow, that's extraordinary. Can you tell me? He says, that's when you learn the greatest secrets. And I said, could you tell me, please, what those secrets are? A stupid American, right? And he looks at me with this look of genuine horror. And he says, not that I had asked, but he said, I couldn't do that to you. He said, if I told you that, your hair is not all gray. If I told you that, you would burst into flames. I mean, he was quite serious about this. There was an honoring of the wisdom of age in that community. And I got it. I really got it. And your point is well taken, and we need to honor wisdom once again in the United States. Coming up Monday on the program, conservative Michael Chapman and I are going to be shaking it up on the role of unions in the coming elections. And Bradley Balko of Reason Magazine stopping by about the militarization of our police departments. SWAT teams coming to you. And don't forget, my friends, activism begins with you. Democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. See you Monday.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. For exclusive Tom Hartman archives and more information, visit us online at airamericaradio.com.